He stares in the eyes of the man who despises him. And you see,
this is my real mother. Said when I came out the womb, my little black sis was raised in the air like bud. And she was proud, because I was going to take after her and not give it to her.
Welcome to Flight 3D. This is your captain speaking. We ask that you please note the emergency exits and safety signs in the event our journey becomes just too deep.
All right, we're going to get into the language that I like. The Lord is powerful, right?
Super Nigga can't put a basketball down. He leap tall, Super Nigga, in a single bound. Super Nigga ain't got no degrees, he ain't got no time for that. Street corner, crack houses, projects, his natural habitat. Super Nigga got super strength, speed and agility. So it's understandable when the cops beat him down to the best of their ability. Super Nigga has no supervision. Instead he has super issues. Between 17 and 25 super inches, used to satisfy them super
sisters. Well, they clone little black girls who won't die but fight. Well, they clone little black girls who supplement stamina for endless struggles to write. Well, they clone little black girls like Asada, Sonia, Tubman, knowing what they know. Well, they clone little black girls like Nikki, Zora, Mommy, Grandma.
Ain't nobody got more than us. Aspiring artists spit saliva in their palms, producing hits, making noise with their fists. Lanky limbros with afros, break beats and pop lock on dance flows. Made a
Let me talk to you for a second. What you won't do for love. You tried everything, but you won't give up. In my heart is only you. Make me do for love what I would not do. I know exactly what you did that stormy night in December. I was a victim of the crime, yes indeed I remember. Knew deep inside you would do anything for the presidents. Wipe your prints off the evidence and make it look like an accident. I wonder what made you react so violently. You convinced me to sign that damn insurance policy. Now I'm the freaking retard, lying in the graveyard, decomposing the dirt, and you still spending my credit card. Think about the things you did. They used to bug me, spent up my money, slept with my buddy. Then it got ugly, then or not. Y'all I got, I'm coming back for you, honey. Till after we part, my heart won't allow me to die. Thugs through 6 feet of dirt, storm clouds screamed in the sky. Tears of blood fell from my eyes. I considered my pain, my cold dead skin bombarded by rain. Homicidally insane, came back from the grave to get her. Came back from the grave to prove I be the dude she can't get rid of. And that sorry cat that's with her, that I once called friend, he only made pretend just to get at her rear end. I seek revenge on him, kill a man, kill him again. Dragging my feet, rigor mortis set in. I move fast as I can. A black cat shrieked as I crossed his path. Caught my reflection on a piece of broken glass, and I laugh on some Charlie Manson chuckle. Dead man walking, past tense like a brass name belt buckle. The angel of death called for me, but I refused to go. And I came back just to let her know. My friends wonder what is wrong with me, 'cause I'm in a daze from your love, you see. And I came back to let her know. Got a thing for you, and I won't let go. Anger and misery got me trapped in this human shell. No time to concentrate on heaven or hell. The angel of death stole my breath so I would not cross over. That's something for wifey boo and a two-faced Casanova. See, in the end, justice will prevail. I'm deader than a motherfucker, they can't send me to jail. They try to stop me, but they fail. Little did they know, I would return from the grave as a ghost roaming the ghetto. At the stroke of midnight, I creeped through the wall, pointed my finger at the ceiling fan and made that fall. Ripped the phone out to prevent them making 911 calls. Not that it would matter, my man saw me, emptied his bladder, his teeth, they started to chatter. His heart filled with fear, he shut his eyes for half a second and I disappeared. Terrified, trying to hide, he know why I came back. Revenge is sweeter than the syrup on your pancake stack. Scream his name from the shadow, asking why he did it. He said he was sorry, begged me for mercy. I said forget it, put my hand on his mouth so the man couldn't shout. My free hand ripped his heart out, without a doubt. Ghosts all up in the house, now for the spouse. I go upstairs, she's in the room, sleep snoring. I levitate, so creeping floorboards won't give her warning. I lay beside her, kissed her on the cheek. The story ends with her friends never seeing her again. My friends wonder what is wrong with me, 'cause I'm in a daze from your love, you see. And I came back to let her know, got a thing for you, and I can't let her go. Got a thing for you, and I can't let her go. And I won't let go.
All right. That was just Bernard Collins, What You Won't Do for Love, and just a sample of some comedic poetry. Welcome to Spoken Word Poetry, the art, the industry, the viability. Tonight we're talking about comedy and poetry, and our special scheduled guest is Tony Spires, a.k.a. Fruition. He is a filmmaker, a producer, a poet, musician, and he is the founder of the Black Comedy Competition, the Bay Area Black Comedy Competition. And as we wait for Mr. Spires to come on, you do have an opportunity, if you like to, come and spit some of your poetry, show us some of your comedic ability. Just call in to 646-716-7994. Again, that call-in number is 646-716-7994. Now, we do have a caller on the line from the 937. Hello? Hello? Caller from the 937, did you want to speak? Okay, I guess our caller didn't want to speak. Just wanted to share everyone, as we're talking about Tony Fruition Spires, he does have a new CD that's out right now, and that CD is called Paradigm Shift. So as we wait for some more people to come on, again, if you like to spit and share your comedic poetry, please do so. In the meantime, we're going to listen to this piece called My Road from his new CD, Paradigm Shift. And this is Tony Fruition Spires.
My Road. Not easy to wax poetic today. Mad for no specific reason. Even harder to see beauty with an ugly frame of mind. Smiling faces rub me wrong, like junior high teasing. Sometimes I wish I could just give it up and leave it all behind. Distant clowns to the right of me, catch me wide mouth cheesing. Diversionary tactics work like old school tricks in 83. And my whole life long, I got all A's and B's. And fools only think that they wish that they were me. Mine is that long dusty road that loners traverse without provisions. Lost in route to finding truth. Hairpin turns cause head-on collisions. Methods long considered uncouth. Smog and soot blend and burn the eyes. Knowledge of self sally intact. Hairpins morph into daggers. Third eye on point to watch my back. My road's straight and narrow, but it's not 'cause I'm good. My road's less traveled and it starts in the hood. My road's paved with old men's dreams.
My road's nowhere nearly as long as it seems. My road's precarious and never well lit. My road's uphill, so you got to stay fit. My road's foreboding like a slippery slope. My road's bound for love and the essence of hope. My road's a pilgrimage, but no ship to sail. My road's an odyssey with no holy grail. My road's an ocean with no shore in view. My road's only visible to a precious few. But you're welcome to join me if adventure's your thing. No dull moments, and that's my word. Whether or not you think that you can sing, where my role leads, your song will be heard. Pick up your pen and follow me. Take my hand, it's dark at night. Even though it's hard to see, I know you'll see your name in light. No power needed to turn them on. There's no equipment for you to buy. When all the glitz of this world has passed away, your name will be written in the sky. In the sky.
We're back. We just got finished listening to My Road by Fruition from his album Paradigm Shift. And we do have our guest on the line. So let me welcome Mr. Tony Fruition Spires. Hello, sir.
Jackie, how you doing, sister?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am so blessed to be here, so happy to be here. And I can't tell you how... I don't know how humbling it always is when I hear somebody playing some of my music. It's just a beautiful thing.
Right. Well, that's a great piece, and we're going to play another one. So we're going to just get this started because we have a few callers on the line now, and they're just listening in, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people listening stream-wise because people want to get to know you. So The world wants to know, who is Tony Spires, the man? And then share us to claim the fame. Like, where are you from? You know, what's your passions? Just, you know, who is Tony Spires?
Wow. Well, I was born on a little log cabin on the... No, I'm kidding. Jackie, I'm just, you know, just a brother out here trying to do his thing, trying to be free, trying to express myself artistically and trying to help people, trying to be a servant. At the same time, I might have a closet ambition or two of being a boss, but at the end of the day, I'm trying to do what God put me on earth to do, and I think that's to be an artist, and that also I think it also means to help people. So, long story short, I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon. Moved to California immediately after high school to pursue a creative writing degree at San Francisco State University. Wound up leaving that department for a lot of reasons. I might have spoke about that on the last time I was on your show, but I was constantly finding myself running into William Shakespeare, and I tried to get away from him as a creative writing major. Tried to get away from him as I became a theater major, caught the acting and theater bug. But I always stayed connected to my creative writing roots, always stayed connected to my theater roots. I wound up as a black studies major, actually, because that's what I got my degree in. That was the department that embraced me, and that was the information that I needed so much to make it in the world at that particular time. And I've been using it my whole life. I've been using the theater. I've been using the creative writing. I've been using the black studies. I went on to form my own theater group in the Bay Area, in San Francisco and Oakland, Berkeley area. Did that for several years. As I found that starting to change, a paradigm shift, if you will, back then in the 1980s, maybe the mid-80s, the theater thing started changing from the kind of socially conscious, politically infused theater that we were doing. It started changing into the kind of theater that we see popularized now, the more, I don't even want to say, because I don't want anybody to get offended by it, but just a different brand of theater, not the, I would say, the kind of plays that you go to the big theaters to see now are more commercial. And in that time frame that I'm talking about, in the 70s and 80s, the 80s is when I came out.
That's the days of the Negro Ensemble.
Exactly. When we still had work to do, and we didn't take it for granted at all. We were black and proud, and we had things to say about our condition, about our people, about pushing our agenda forward, and we didn't have a lot of time for a lot else. So that's what I got involved in, and when that changed, I found myself still wanting to do what I do and still wanted to have my connection to my people. So I, for one reason or another, started producing stand-up comedy, started performing it a little bit, but mostly producing stand-up comedy shows. And from that evolved the Bay Area Black Comedy Competition. From that evolved me becoming a personal manager of some of the great comedians of our time, and then moving to L.A. from Oakland, moving down to the Los Angeles area. And I've been down here ever since, making films, making independent films, still producing theater, writing, doing the various things that I do, writing my column for the Human Mill magazine, again, making plays, both feature-length and now short films also, and doing my poetry, spoken word that I've always done, but now in the new era of spoken word, it's about music tracks and it's about memorization of the stuff that I write, because I, at the era I came up in, we were more or less emulating people from the Black Arts Movement, and then Gil Scott-Heron, so and the Last Poets. So I'm infusing all those things that I've learned, the things that I have experienced, and I'm just still trying to push that artistic bandwagon forward, and hoping that people jump on board.
Okay, so
how's that?
You just are rich. You're rich in experience. And all around Renaissance man, as far as the arts, you're just, you know, all around. Now, one part you spoke about on another show that you didn't speak about this show, because you spoke on video production for poets, you didn't talk about your work as a filmmaker.
Oh, okay. Well, I also want to talk a little bit more about Full Vision Arts Foundation, our youth arts component also. But in terms of film, it's funny because the reason I was late getting on air with you today, I was working on a screenplay, and it's funny because I wrote this play, I hate to age myself, but at least 30 years ago, more than that. I'm trying to figure out the exact date, but it was a long time ago, and I wrote this. I didn't even know about writing screenplays, and I was always writing plays. But I look at this, and I'm looking at the structure and the format of it and the flow of it. I'm like, this is a screenplay. So I said, I dug it out of my archives, and I've just been rewriting it lately, putting it in screenwriter format so I can shoot it. And, like, this is like, film has always been my passion. Since my aunt moved up from Mississippi and taught me about the movies, I've been in love with the movies, and always saw myself being involved in the movies, doing the movies, and God blessed me with the ability, first of all, with the drive to want to find out more about it, and with the ability to do it, and I've been making these films. So my first film was a gangster movie. Some people might call them a hood pick, but it was set in South Central Los Angeles, and it was a I guess you'd say a straight up gangster movie, but it had a conscious undertone to it. It was about a guy who got in over his head with the wrong folks, and while he was in the eye of the storm, got caught up in that street game, but also fell in love with a young lady and decided it was time for him and her to get out. And it's just a whole gang of stuff that happens to him while he's trying to do that. And he complicates things by not only trying to get out, but trying to rob the kingpin on his way out. So it's like a very interesting story that culminates in a big showdown, as you can imagine. That's called Two
yeah.
Degrees. Two Degrees. Okay. And actually starring my top management client, Don D.C. Curry. And
okay.
Most people probably know as Uncle Elroy from the Friday films. And
okay.
from BET, Comic View, Grace Under Fire, et cetera. And then also it co-starred William L. Johnson, another good friend of mine who's worked in I don't know how many films William has under his belt now, but people probably remember him mostly from my movies and from Blue Hill Avenue, which is, I think, one of the great independent gangster films of the last decade. That was Two Degrees. Then a few years later, We went back in and actually did my first screenplay that I didn't feel like I was ready to do first, called Tears of a Clown, which is about the rise, fall, and redemption of a black stand-up comic, which I really am close to. That's the business that I've been in since like 1986, so I really have a strong tie to black comedy, and it really is semi-autobiographical because it deals with a lot of the things that I went through. And, again, it's the rise, fall, and redemption of a black stand-up, but it's also about the rise, fall, and redemption of a black manager, too. And it, had a lot of autobiographical elements to it. My latest film, which is a short, now those are two full-length featured two-hour films shot on 35-millimeter film, but this last film is a digital film I just shot using the new digital filmmaking formats that are available. It's an HD movie, and it's a short movie, only like 26 minutes and 14 seconds, called Joke Thief. And in this film, I'm working with some of my young comedian artists that I'm bringing up and helping to develop, starring B.T. Kingsley and, again, my old favorite, William L. Johnson. And he actually is reprising a role that he played in Tears of a Clown, which is the one I just told you about. So that's a short film, and we're right now sending it out to the film festivals, just trying to stir that filmmaking pot back up, get back out there. We've been blessed to do some very interesting movies. People have received them very well. They played all over the country in theaters and DVD and the whole bit. So we're looking forward to Joke Thief doing well. And really, between you and me and everybody listening, What Joke Thief is about, really, it was just started out as an idea. BT, the young comic I managed, he like wanted to do a short film of his own. He wrote this great romantic comedy script, but he didn't feel like he was ready to take on a lead role yet. He said, "Tony, I want you to direct this for me, but I'm not sure I can take on this big film role yet. What should I do?" I said, "Well, look, I'll write something for you as an acting reel, and you can just get your chops up, and we can show people what you can do, and then maybe you'll feel confident enough to do it." And from that little exercise came a whole screenplay, and from that whole screenplay came the actual film. So it's a starring vehicle for him now. So hopefully, if everything works out well, Lord willing, the film will be a festival darling, and he'll be the star of the festival darling. So that's where we are today, except, like I said, I'm writing more scripts right now. And just a word, I know I'm talking a lot, I'm talking fast, but just a word to all the aspiring filmmakers, young filmmakers, new filmmakers, or even playwrights, because I started out as a playwright. Write it and put it away. Just because there's no reason or you don't see the avenue or the opening or the lane right now to produce that piece, just write it anyway. Write it anyway. And once you write it, it might come to you 5, 10, 20, in my case, 30-some-odd years later, it can pop up. This is handwritten in pencil. Okay, I found it. And it's still got, of course, I have to update it and all that, but it's still very relevant. So people out there, young people especially, and you old heads like me, hey, you never know what you're being preserved for. God might be preserving you. You see all your contemporaries doing this and that. Some might be passing you up. Some might not even be here anymore. Some might be on a whole different level. Some might be off the planet at this point. You don't know what God's timetable is for you. Keep on grinding. Keep on doing what you do. And you writers, again, just write it. Save it. Now we got all kind of, I'm digging, finding things in old paper file folders, but now there's a million ways to store things. So write it, yeah. Store it, archive it, come back and get it later. It'll still be good.
Yeah. They say write the vision down, make it plain. Sonia Sanchez says in her classes, write, just write, then you come back and edit. But when it comes to you, write, just write.
Exactly.
And so, and then segue in, talking about Sonia Sanchez, you know, this is the poet crowd. This is spoken word poetry, the art, the industry, the viability. So just, I know one of your things, we want to talk about poetry and comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things you said in the last show that you love you for you to share with this audience, what are your thoughts about Page to the Stage?
Whoa.
That was your,
Yeah. That's a very important point that a real old dude taught me a long time ago. He was old then. He's real old now. He's still alive, still doing his thing. And what he taught me was because, like, a lot of times people, when they're doing stuff, they'll say, oh, no, when they're speaking, they may talk to you to an extent. And all of a sudden they'll say, yeah, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? You know what I mean. You know what I'm saying, right? It's like, no, say it. And the same thing goes for writing. Don't assume people get it. And don't assume that the idea is going to translate orally or verbally. Write it down. And if you want a piece to make it to the theater stage or to the sound stage, write it down. Because if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. It ain't going to get to the stage unless it's on the page. Okay? That's just like music. Music is an international language. Write it. Screenplays, movies, TV scripts, stage plays, poems, write it. You might be a great, you might have a photographic memory. You know, you might. But if everything you do, like my writing guru told me 20 some odd years ago when I started learning how to write screenplays, he told me, because I was just a playwright then and I didn't know how to write screenplays, he told me that ain't on the page, ain't on the stage. He also told me write down everything. You can edit it later. Write down everything. You can edit it later. The key is it's got to be written down, so I can't emphasize that too much or too often. Write it down. And he said, if you're going to do everything yourself, then it doesn't matter how it looks or what format it's in. If you're going to direct it, if you're going to shoot it, if you're going to do everything, including writing it and acting in it, and it's just you're a one-man show, you can do it all, then it doesn't matter. But if you got other people involved, it's very important to communicate with all of them, and the script is the blueprint. With the script, you can show everybody, get every, because film is a highly collaborative art form in most cases, unless you're Robert Rodriguez, and even he got to depend on somebody. So it's a collaborative art form, so it's very important to write it down so that everybody can see the vision, because these are artists too. Give them some credit. They're artists too. They can see the vision. If sometimes you can pitch an idea and people get it. But if you write it down and then you refer to it and they get to read it and see it, it's a lot easier for them to get it all.
And also, would you say, especially as far as, you know, just poets, even if you're a spoken word poet, and especially if you're recording, isn't that another revenue stream you're missing if you don't have the writing, if you're just recording but you're not recording the written part of it?
Can you expound on that a little bit more for me?
Just like a person who just sings a song, but they didn't
mm-hmm.
write the song.
Right.
If you don't have the rights to the writing, that's another revenue stream. You get performance rights or one thing, but you want to get the revenue for also the writing.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. The publishing is like, in terms of music, I mean, when we sometimes young people hear a song, and they think it's the first time the song has ever been recorded. But some of us who've been around a while know that song may have been done three, maybe four times by different artists over the decades. And that original writer is getting paid each and every time that song gets done. So, and then if the song is separated between lyrics and music, there you go. There's two people getting paid. But if you're the songwriter, there's a million examples of this and how that worked. But Lenny Williams made a lot of money off of Twista. Rick James made a lot of money off of MC Hammer. Bruce Hornsby made money off of Tupac. I mean, it's a million examples. These are things that just come to mind now, but you see it every day. Burt Bacharach made all kind of money from people like Luther, okay?
Mm.
So it's all kind of songs that have been, because I think A House Is Not a Home, I think, was written by him or one of his contemporaries, and Dionne Warwick sang it in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then Luther took it and popularized it. Ronald Isley and the Isley Brothers did a lot of songs that were written by people who were like rock and roll or folk artists. They weren't even artists in our genre or whatever, not even on our radar as black folks. But a lot of times Lionel Richie and Kenny Rogers used to write songs for each other. Stevie Wonder and Aretha Franklin used to write all kind of songs. Smokey Robinson wrote all kind of songs for other people. You know, Otis Redding wrote Respect for Aretha.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. So it's a lot of that. And then the same thing goes if you're a writer and you have a novel, publish the novel, self-publish it. It's amazing how many people, how many producers, film producers in particular, want to license, they want to option your book because they just have this thing about wanting to do a movie from a book.
Yeah.
Of course, the better the book does, the better. But even if it's unpublished, I've seen unpublished books get deals for movies.
Yeah.
See, so it's writing is the key. To me, it all starts with writing, you know.
Yeah.
If you were a person that was physically challenged in some way, there are ways now where you could still write.
You got your voice recorder now.
Exactly.
Software you can just speak it into and it writes, and then all you have to do is just edit it or clean it up. But I really just wanted to share that as far as an industry outlook for people that if you think I just record, you know, I record my poetry, I put it on an album, I sell it myself. But if it comes hot and somebody does want to use it, they may use it in a movie and all, but before you know it, because there is no written copyright on the words, somebody will come up, you know, write it out and copyright the poem.
Yes, absolutely.
They can even give you credit, but somebody else is now also getting paid, even if you may get, but they'll also get paid because they copywrote the written work.
Exactly.
So it's not just enough, like you said, to memorize and know your work in your head, and then you're going out performing it. You're missing a lot by not writing it down and, copyright and registering the written portion as well, even if
absolutely.
You're spoken word artist.
You've got to handle your business. You've got to handle your business. It's not enough anymore, especially. It really never was because there's so many black artists who got ripped off back in the day. People like Little Richard and people like Bessie Smith and people like
TLC. They just had it.
Oh, exactly. 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 Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Is that my grandfather was a famous Chicago blues artist, one of the architects of the Chicago Blues. And I actually have to seek out his material from other people because in those days, quote, the man, unquote, would invite you to come into his studio and pay you $100 and say, record. Mm-hmm. You might be there for a week recording mm-hmm. all your stuff. He'd give you $100 and say, I'm going to make you a star. I'm going to put your music on the radio. I'm going to do you a favor and put your music mm-hmm. on the radio.
You see? Now he got the master. He's on everything. And that's
exactly.
what
and that,
that's
that
what saying. That's so important.
Exactly.
Yeah, even now, though, but as a poet, you need to write it down because somebody may do that. You know, you think, well, it's my poem because it's in my – but if you never wrote it down and, you know, you don't have proof of your writing, there's no place where it's written and it says it's written by you and copyrighted, then
mm-hmm.
you
mm-hmm.
get the performance part of it, but, you know, you may have to share, if you know, if you can even prove it.
If you can
you
even
know,
prove it.
Prove
if
it,
you can
yes.
even prove
it. Prove
absolutely.
It,
and the same
it, yes.
for, screen, for screenplays and stage mm-hmm. plays, too. You need to register your writing, regardless
mm-hmm.
of what genre, what artistic genre or endeavor you partake in. If you write it, there is a medium. There is a tool for you to use, like the Writers Guild, if you're a writer. Of course, the
mm-hmm.
office copyrights for everything, okay? But
yeah.
there's always going to be a – and because they have a Google and et cetera now, you can always look up exactly where you should go and what you should do. But there are ways that you can, from the comfort of your own home and from your own desktop or laptop or even from your cell phone.
Tony?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, yeah. So, Tony, we want to just talk a little bit, get going, because we're halfway through, more than halfway through. We want to talk about comedy, because I know these, you know, some of your best poets are very comedic. And
mm-hmm.
what is the, like, the niche, and where do you see, first of all, what is that specialty you need as far as using comedy and poetry and the timing and all, and then what opportunities do you see or exist? Is there for poets that are more comedic? Are there more opportunities for them? What opportunities do you see?
I think it is.
Your comedians come through. Are they also poets? Or
well, you
know
what?
Share with us about comedy.
There are some comedians who are poets. There's one very popular comedian by the name of Shang, who people might know. Shang, originally from New York, now in Los Angeles, very funny comic. He's a very socially conscious, politically astute comic who is actually a how can I put this? He's a very strong poet with a lot to say. He's also an actor. He actually has a show. I think the name of it is Isms. In fact, it is the name of it. The name of it is Isms. We actually produced his play back in, I think, 2002. In 2002, we actually did his play in the Bay Area as part of our Bay Area Black Comedy Competition and Festival. So he put a one-man show together using his comedy talent, using his spoken word poetry talent, and using his acting and writing ability. Shang did that. There's a young brother that I work with now. His name is Ice Life. He's from Oakland. He's in terms of the spoken word, the hip-hop and spoken word circles, he's very well known. He's an independent recording artist as a hip-hop MC, a rapper. He's also a theater artist. He's also a spoken word artist, and he's very funny. And he keeps telling me, Tony, you got to put me on stage. And I'm tempted to do it because he's just that funny. He has a play. He has a book. And here comes the book thing again, a book he wrote called Pistols and Prayers, which is kind of an experimental book. It has some of his essays, some of his poetry, some of his stories, et cetera. It makes a real nice book. He took that book, Pistols and Prayers, and made it into a theater piece. And inside that theater piece, he gets to showcase all of his talents. He's probably known mostly as a spoken word poet, but he's also a very talented MC with two CDs under his belt that sold very, very well on the independent market. He's performed all over the world and he uses his comedy. I was just in the show. We just did a 9-week run here in Hollywood. Just ended last month in November, started in September, called Pistols and Prayers. And he is actually doing his comedy routine in between doing his spoken word poetry. So if there was ever an example of that being done, Ice Life does it in Pistols and Prayers. That's a contemporary example. This is a young man doing his thing. And trust me, he will one day get on that. And I've actually put him in front of thousands of people to do his spoken word in some comedy shows that I've done in the Bay Area Black Comedy Competition and Festival at the Paramount Theater in Oakland. 2 years in a row, I put him in stage in front of thousands of people. He got up there and did a humorous poem and cracked people up just as if he was telling a joke. So First thing you got to have is a sense of humor. First of all, you got to have the wherewithal to be up there in front of people, first of all. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you are performing for people. Unless you're the kind of person that just wants to record it and let people hear it, then you ultimately will be on stage performing for people. So you have to have that wherewithal, I like to say talent or ability, and then you take it from there. If you're going to interject or infuse comedy in what you're doing, you must have a sense of humor. You must have a point of view, okay? That means you need something to say, and you need to know how you're going to say it. When Richard Pryor first got started doing stand-up, he wanted to be like Bill Cosby. So he emulated Bill Cosby. Now, any of us who know both of those guys or know their material or their act, you know there's nothing further, no two stand-ups are further apart artistically than Richard Pryor and Bill Cosby. But when Richard finally found his own voice, my goodness gracious. So find your own voice. That's called a point of view. Know where you're coming from. Know how you're going to relay your point to your crowd. Who is your crowd? Who are you trying to talk to? Who are you communicating with? Who would even be able to identify with your message or your point of view or your story? You see, if you got a whole bunch of rich person's jokes, but all your comedy takes place in the hood, then it's not going to work. So you have to know who you're speaking to. Who is your audience? Have a sense of humor and not be scared. And you have to put the work in. It's not automatic. It's like any art form that anybody has ever endeavored upon, they had to put the work in. And once you get the work in and you think you're proficient, that's when it starts. That's when you start putting the work in. When you think you got it something, that's when it really starts. And then even when you get up on stage and you're good and you've perfected your craft, you think, guess what? Take a month or two off and see if it's perfected. Not so much. So it's work. And if you do more than one thing, it's going to take more than one period of time or period of dedication. If you want to be half good at things, then just put in the half amount of time. But if you want to be a great singer, you got to put in singing time, the full time it takes to be a singer. And if you want to be a rapper and a singer, then you got to be a great rapper and you got to be a great singer. I mean, you don't have to. You can be mediocre, but who aspires to be mediocre? You want to be a poet, you got to put the work in. You want to be a comic, it's a lot of work. More than to me, as a guy who's done both music and poetry and comedy, comedy is very unique in and of itself because if you're a singer, even if you don't evoke all the emotions out of the song that you want or out of the people that you want them to, you don't, even if everybody doesn't feel the exact thing you want them to feel, even if you're not a great singer, if you do a decent job, you get a decent amount of applause. If you're a comedian and it's not funny, there's no redemption for not funny. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
No redemption for not funny. Either you're funny or you're not. They're booing, they're talking over you, they're laughing at you instead of with you. So with comedy, the challenge is you must be funny.
Okay.
Yes.
So do you think the people, comedic spoken word artists are like, you know, doubly gifted because they're able to put that comedy in a rhythmic form?
I think that comedians can do it all. I think comedians, I mean, again, going to Richard Pryor, okay, going to our second female Academy Award winner and our third Academy Award winner, period, Whoopi Goldberg. Mm-hmm. Look at Whoopi Goldberg. I mean, she, as an actress, she's a bad girl. As a comedian, of course, we already know. Richard Pryor, if you saw any of Richard Pryor's movies, like Which Way Is Up, if you saw him in Lady Sing the Blues, you've seen him in The Mac, you've seen him in so many different Black Brigade, you saw a great actor, a great actor. I mean, not just a guy who can act, but a great actor with nuance, with range. I mean, you saw a great Robin Williams, the white comedian and actor. Brilliant stand-up. Also, Academy Award winner. Okay. Tom Hanks, Academy Award winner. Comedian. Okay, and this is just off the top of my head. It's a lot of great, funny people. Eddie Murphy hasn't won an Oscar, but maybe he should have by now. But Eddie Murphy, for 10 years running, was the biggest box office star in Hollywood. Okay, with, you know, when movies weren't making $100 million, he was making $100 million. His movies were grossing $100 million in the United States back when they weren't doing that. Okay, Eddie Murphy is a great stand-up, as evidenced by Delirious and Raw. And, of course, he's a comedic genius when it comes to film acting, too. And if you guys saw Dreamgirls, was it Dreamgirls? Dreamgirls, yes. He did a very...
Yeah.
Oh. Moving dramatic role also. So we see what Eddie, and now you see him singing, singing again after a 20-some year hiatus of singing. He's being taken seriously as a serious musician now. So comedians have a very special gift. Again, it goes with what I was saying about how hard it is, because being funny, that's why you see so many tragic comics, so many comics who end up dying before their time or getting drug addicted. I mean, a lot of our artists, and not just artists, but a lot of our artists go that route. But comedians, you see that, you say, how can a person be so funny but in real life be so sad? Because you have to run the range of them. Look at, you know who I left out? The winner of our 1991 Bay Area Black Comedy Competition, Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
In 1991, he won our event, got on in Living Color from there, and went on to win what? Another Oscar. Another comedian wins another Oscar. And Jamie Foxx is a great singer, songwriter, pianist. Okay?
Mm-hmm. He's a musician,
but he's a stand-up. He got his break because, like, for me, when I was young, it was about theater. It was about theater. That was what was happening in the Bay Area in my youth. It was everybody was getting in. If you were getting in, you were getting in through theater.
Mm-hmm.
People like, again, Whoopi Goldberg. My first professional play that I produced was playing across the street from where Whoopi Goldberg launched her one woman show, Moms. Right across the street. I didn't even know who Whoopi Goldberg was, but I was launching my first professional show. And she was starring in her first one-woman professional show. And that play, it was in San Francisco at the time at the Victoria Theater. That play was Broadway bound, okay, and then HBO bound.
Mm-hmm.
But from those very humble beginnings, the point is that if you have the ability to make people laugh, it's easy to make them cry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you'd like to call in, I just want to share with the audience, we got like 10 more minutes of streaming live. So if you'd like to call in, the number is 646-716-7994. Again, their call-in number is 646-716-7994. Press the number 1 if you want to speak, because you can call in and just listen. So if you want to speak, you want to share, if you want to ask Tony any questions, Tony is the founder and producer of the Black Comedy Competition. Tell them a little bit about that, Tony.
Okay, I'd love to. The Bay Area Black Comedy Competition and Festival, in now in its 28th year, 28. Some of y'all might not even be 28 years old. In his 28th year, and it is the vehicle that I was blessed and inspired to create back in the 80s because, again, the theater movement seemed to be changing. People seemed to be going more toward things that were funny. I started producing stand-up comedy shows in theaters, in community theaters first, and it worked. Before you know it, I saw that in San Francisco, in particular, there was a place called the San Francisco International Comedy Competition, and they were very successful. And they didn't have that many black comedians performing in it. They said our comedians weren't funny enough, we weren't skilled enough to perform in their competition. So I'm like, that's not fair. So I had an idea, let's start some comedic affirmative action, and that's the term I used throughout the whole process of building it, and we launched it. And within 2 years, we had a champ by the name of Mark Curry, who people know from Hanging with Mr. Cooper fame, who won our event. We had people like Jamie Foxx and D.L. Hughley and Chris Tucker and Mike Epps and Cat Williams. I actually met Don D.C. Curry, who I manage now, doing the event. Nick Cannon did the event when he was 16 years old and got discovered there. So many people have, again, Chris Tucker got discovered there. So many great people have gone on from our event and done great things. But it's a launching pad. It's a vehicle to showcase your talent the way we do it. There was a lot of comedy going on, but it didn't include what we did, our art form, black comedy. People weren't even using the term black comedy at that point. But now they want to use the word urban comedy to replace the word black. But let's face it, it's what comes from us. It's the kind of comedy. It's not always, the performers are not always black, and the audiences are not all black. But it's the kind of material, and it's the kind of performance, it's the kind of point of view that comes from someone who is highly knowledgeable and sensitive to the African-American experience, and it's being performed for those who are of like mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's what we did, and 28 years later, we're still standing, and every year bringing through an incredible number and an incredible amount of gifted comedians from all over the country. People have come from Europe, from Canada, from the Caribbean. People have come, so we're really an international comedy festival. Starting in 2002, we became a festival and start producing more aspects to it. We have a tremendous daytime component called the Comedian Educational Forum, where we teach the performers, not just comedians, but all performing artists, some of the nuts and bolts of the business of show business. So we go deep. We have special guests come in from all over the country and lecture and do workshops and teach them hands-on how to do the various things that make this business work. So this is what we've been developing, again, since the 80s, the competition, since 2002, the festival. And, again, we've actually seen a lot of good people come to our event and blow up. Of course, most people don't blow up in anything, but we've been blessed to actually be able to help some people really take their careers to the next level, and people who didn't necessarily even know what they were going to be. They didn't know what they were going to be when they did our event. They just knew they were talented. And like I said, when I started, theater was the way out. No matter what you really wanted to do or what your heart ached to do, theater was the popular way out. I wasn't in L.A., so I didn't even know about the L.A. scene, and I was in the Bay Area, and it's a highly artistic, highly cultural place, highly politically charged place, so we were doing theater. And from theater, we evolved into comedy, and from comedy, we evolved into TV and film, and, it's been really a really fun ride, a very challenging race. Now, it hasn't always been fun. If I look at it, I have to say it's been fun. But every minute hasn't been fun. Sometimes it's been very hard, very challenging, very unrelenting sometimes in terms of the stress and the other things, the ups and the downs, the heartaches you go through just being independent out here, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. I love what I do. I'm not the only one that does this. I'm just the one talking right now. But it's a lot of us out here who have given a lot to do what we love to do. And I want to say this, Jackie, before I hog up all your time here. Entrepreneurship is not for everybody, and neither are the arts in terms of a career, to pursue a career, but I highly recommend entrepreneurship. Even if you don't end up doing it, check it out. Because for our folks, for black people, Latinos, any third world person out here trying to make a way in this country, we need to be entrepreneurs. We need to be businessful. If you look at the other people who immigrate, who migrate to this country, first thing they do if they have opportunity is to start a business, regardless of what kind of business it is. Back in the day, and I don't mean to be funny, so don't take this the wrong way, folks, but during the segregation years, we were entrepreneurs. We had to be. We went to the corner store that was ours, the corner dry cleaners that was ours, the movie theater that was ours. So that's a whole nother piece, but I just want to say, check out entrepreneurship. Check it out. Check it out. It could lead to freedom. Okay.
Because you're making noise back there. You're making noise when you come in. You can hear the door squeak. I can show you how many shows you hear the door squeaking.
Hello.
Yes, yes. I apologize. Okay. I apologize. Go ahead. All right. I do apologize.
That's all good.
So I just want to let anybody know we have just a few more minutes that we're streaming live. And so call in if you want to speak with Tony, if you want to share your work with him. And I know you did share about was Ice Life. You had him perform. So do you sometimes allow poets to perform at the Black Comedy Competition?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's part of it, because that's part of what I am, part of what I do. So just giving respect to it, giving back to it. And I mean, absolutely. And to those who are, we've had male and female performers. And it was in 2008 we actually had an event called the Poetry and Spoken Word competition that we actually had as part of the Barrier Black Comedy Competition, kind of like a side feature, and it went very, very well because people love it. And the poets are so astute that they know what piece to pick for what situation. I'm scheduled to perform in Watts this Saturday for an outdoor event, and it's something that you have to be ready for. You going into Watts to a highly economically depressed environment, and you have to have the right material for that environment and for that crowd. You can't knock them over the head with something that is not going to go over well. You got to be sensitive. And the same thing with poets performing in front of a comedy crowd. You have to know these people are here to hear jokes. So this wouldn't be the moment necessarily that I would do a poem about the assassination of Martin Luther King or Malcolm X. This might not be the right forum for it because they're in a humorous mood. So this might be the moment for me to do a poem. Still can be socially relevant, still can be political, but do it with a sense of humor. You see? Yeah. So the poets like comedians. People always say, well, comedians got to be clean. They got to this is a clean show. I need comedians who are clean. Like, every comedian is clean if you pay them to be clean. And I think every poet is knowledgeable of what to do if you pay them to do, and you outline what it is you need them to do at any particular time. So artists are smart that way. They know how to adapt.
Yes. I'm glad you made that mention that, you know, they're definitely worthy to be paid.
Absolutely.
Yes. So before we close out, again, I gave everybody opportunity, 646-716-7994. We have 42 seconds. If you don't call in, we won't be able to hear you. right now. But, Tony, we're still recording. So talk a little bit about your nonprofit.
Our nonprofit organization is Full Vision Arts Foundation. We've been doing this since 2007. It's primarily, to this point at least, it's been primarily in the San Francisco Bay Area, primarily in the city of Oakland. And it is a multidisciplinary youth arts organization where we emphasize the development of artistic skill in spoken word poetry, filmmaking, theater, be it acting, writing, producing, directing, music performance, music composition, musicianship, and comedy.
Okay.
Oh, and dance.
Okay.
And dance. So I'm not a dancer myself, but we brought in some very great expert and professional choreographers and dancers, and that's what we do. I teach the arts that I'm skilled in, but those that I'm not skilled in, I bring in artists from other disciplines, and they teach the kids. We actually teach young people ages 14 to 19 in the performing arts, and then we produce professional events that include professional artists that come in, guest artists, professional guest artists who come in and perform with the kids and give them a unique experience on stage. So that they can, and we also teach them how to do the work behind the scenes so that they can help produce the events as well. Production, marketing, and advertising, actually in many cases writing. I really emphasize that they write their own material. We didn't do cover songs. When it was music or poetry, we didn't do covers, or we didn't do some work somebody else did. It was all original. And I was always there right with them, side by side, performing with them, writing with them. And we did some amazing work. We're still doing some amazing work with some phenomenally gifted young people. And everybody involved hasn't gone on. It's not going to go on to be a superstar. Some will, I'm sure. Some won't. Most won't. But what they gain an invaluable life experience. Just like kids who play little league sports or what have you. Everybody doesn't become a professional basketball player, football player, baseball player, but you learn things like cooperation and teamwork and responsibility and discipline and self-discipline and so many things that you learn from sports, the same things I think you learn in the arts too. So we're teaching young people, and we're trying to save lives and get a lot of the inner-city kids off the street and into something positive. That's the bottom line. Trying to get them into something positive. And if it saves their life, then our mission has already been accomplished. And if they go on to be a great artist, then power to us there too. If they go on and share what they learn with other people, then we've really done something. So that's like our give back piece, but it's really evolved into more than that because some really viable productions have come out of it. I've written pieces for the kids, and they've written pieces for themselves, and we've collaborated, and I mean, and now you look at these kids, and they're doing it. They're doing it. They're confident. You can't tell them anything now because they've been in it. They've done it. So we're very proud about that. We feel like that's like a ministry. We think God is using us to do some great things with these young folks.
Okay. Well, that sounds really great. Now, I did, wish we put it earlier, but I did put it in the chat room, and so I just want to let everybody know that they can reach the Full Vision Arts by going to fullvisionarts.org.
That's right.
Fullvisionarts.org, and then your latest CD is Paradigm Shift, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and how can people get a hold of that and check you out?
Fruition.com, P-H-R-U-I-S-H-U-N, fruition.com. You can listen to some tracks. You can purchase the CD. You can holler at me. I love to hear from you. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/fruition, P-H-R-U-I-S-H-U-N, fruition. Would love to hear from you. Communicate with me. Holler at me. If I can help, I'd be happy to.
Okay. Well, thank you, and this has been a very enlightening show, and you're a very just dynamic person, so we're glad to, you know, have gotten to know you and meet with you and all the great things that you do as a filmmaker, a poet, a producer, a writer, a screenplay and playwright, and you have a nonprofit and films. And so now if we go to fruition.com, or is that a place where you also have your film, or is that just your spoken word?
That's
Do you yet have a one place that where people can experience all your work, at least that's all your published work?
Yeah, if you go to blackcomedycompetition.com, that is the hub.
Okay.
And everything is there. You might have to. It may not be as automatic as I like right now, but the fruition stuff you have to look for, you have to click. But everything that I do is represented on blackcomedycompetition.com. The movies, the youth organization, Full Vision Arts Foundation, the Barrier Black Comedy Competition, is there. So I encourage people to go there and start there. If you go to fullvision.org, you'll also be able to connect to what we're doing also. I need to put more emphasis on me as the artist, and hopefully in 2014, Lord willing, that's what I'm going to do. And I think, you know, it's time for that too, because of just my nature and what I do. I really believe in helping people and really believe in trying to be a servant. So sometimes I put the emphasis on somebody else as opposed to myself. And I'm still going to do that. But, again, when you try to do more, you got to spend more time. You got to work harder. So that's what I plan on doing in 2014 so that I can say, yeah, go to fruition.com and get my T-shirts, get my hats.
All right.
I'm looking forward to doing all
those extra lines of revenue.
Exactly.
Now,
revenue.
Just in speaking of, you didn't tell us, how does one get involved with, when does the Black Comedy Competition happen? Generally, what time every year, and how does one get involved?
It's May.
If they want to compete.
It's May. Mm-hmm. Well, the idea is to go through to blackcomedycompetition.com. You can go to blackcomedycompetition.com and go to the contact section, send us an email requesting information on the Bay Area Black Comedy Competition and Festival, and we'll make sure that you are updated, because it's a recruitment process. People have to apply to the event. There is a fee associated with application. If you're accepted, then you'll be contacted. When you apply, you'll be requested to send in a lot of information about yourself, including a reel, a performance reel that shows us that you have what we're looking for our competition. And then we will reach out to you, tell you that you are accepted. And if indeed you are, then you'll be given so much information, you'll get tired of getting information from us. But you'll be told exactly where to come, what to do, how to behave, what the rules and regulations are of every sort. And we look forward to meeting new people. People come from all over the country, and I said from other countries each year. So always looking to develop and showcase new talent. Barrier Black Comedy Competition, found at blackcomedycompetition.com. And like I always tell people, got to spell competition correctly.
Okay, that's C-O-M-P-E-T-I-T-I-O-N, competition.
That's what I'm talking
okay.
about.
Okay, yeah. So that's, you know, everyone knows how they can compete and or what it needs to be a part of it. So it happens May every year, correct?
Yes, well, it's happened at different months over the years. It started out as a Black History Month event in February, but over the last several years, it's been a May event, and that's worked out very, very well for us. It's getting a little warmer then, and mm-hmm. it just works out good. You know, what we find is a lot of times when we have an event in February, some of the comedians will get snowed in. People will be coming from D.C. and Philly and New York and Boston, and they say, man, we're snowed in. So,
yeah,
you know.
January and February can be hard months.
Exactly. So we push it back to make it where everybody usually can make it in the warmer spring months. It's a little bit easier to travel.
Okay. Well, that's exciting. And, again, you know, you've been told how you can reach out to Tony, and if you want to display some of your work, but I don't know if everyone noticed, but one of the most important things in that he stated is that you're going to have to submit a reel. So that means you need to have work on video, and you need to take and invest on someone putting together your video work and, you know, editing it so that it reads well, like a video resume, so that you can show samples of your work and different things to tell about yourself. So if you don't have that as an artist, that's something very important that you need, especially this day and time. Almost everyone wants to see video.
Because
it's one thing to hear you, but they want to see how you perform.
Absolutely. So
okay.
True.
Okay. Well, Tony, thank you so much. Thank you for gracing us with your time. Oh, you know, I did want to take a moment real quick and just make one announcement. If I could find this real quick. Paul Mooney is back. And
mm-hmm.
He's getting ready to do a show. He overworked his voice. So he was going to call in and make the announcement, but he overworked his voice a little bit. But Paul Mooney and they have a theater group too. Okay, here it is. Paul Mooney is recruiting sketch writers, so anybody good at sketch writing, for his Theater Black repertory group. And he says he's back, and he's doing a New Year's Eve on December 26th event, Paul Mooney's Hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the Darkness, mm-hmm. The Last Stand Tour. And that's
mm-hmm.
December 26th through New Year's Eve, and that's at the Berkeley Black Repertory Group Theater.
Yes, yes. And I'm very familiar with that theater. In fact, in 1981, I performed at that theater.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's a historic place in the Bay Area. That's a historic black theater group. Nora Vaughn is like a legend in the Bay Area. She's long since passed, but in the 60s, she founded that organization, her and her husband, and almost every actor, probably every actor over 40 has performed in the Bay Area, has performed one time or another at the Black Rep. Now the torch is being carried by her grandson, Sean Vaughn Scott, who's running the Black Rep. We actually have done events there. We've done theater there, but I've done theater there as a youth. But also in recent years, we did a comedy show there also. So it's a good comedy venue. It's right there in the neighborhood, in the community. People know where it is. I definitely encourage people to go out and support Paul. Paul's been doing his holiday season shows there for many years because Paul is like, I guess his second home would be the Bay Area, would be
yes.
Oakland. The theater's right at the Oakland-Berkeley border. And
mm-hmm.
Paul's been doing shows there for several years during the holiday season, and they're very well attended. Paul Mooney
okay.
is a legend. We honored Paul, I believe, in 2009 at the Bay Area Black Comedy Competition as a legend. We put him in the Black Comedy Hall of Fame, gave him an award. He was good enough to come, receive the award, speak to the crowd. It was a great, great time. Paul's a legend.
Yes. Well, definitely some
mind.
Great networking opportunities, and I'm going to connect you with his manager again, so because they're doing more theater. Theater is coming back, too, now.
mm-hmm.
Everyone
mm-hmm.
seems to be very back active again in theater. So, you know, they're looking to network and connect. So just for everyone, that's information. You can share it along. Y'all make me want to be on the West Coast for the holidays.
It's a lot warmer.
Yes, definitely.
No,
it's way warmer.
mm-hmm.
Okay, Tony, again, thank you so much. And we are going to definitely go to blackcomedycompetition.com, check you out. And for people, buy his album, Paradigm Shift. We listened to My Road earlier, and we're going to roll out on Paradigm Shift. And we speak for everyone peace and love. And thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you.
Paradigm shift. When the pulse of your heart meets your mind and defines a new beat. Paradigm shift. When the planets align, fortunes change, and people ride in the street. Paradigm shift. When you're no longer defined by the thing that they say you have to do. Paradigm shift. Instead of begging for breaks, now the same cats are running after you. Paradigm shift. When you won 5 or 6 rings, they blink, now you're owning the team. Paradigm shift. When there's no confusion in your myth because you're living your dream. Paradigm shift. When the mighty and proud fall and meek folks inherit the earth. Paradigm shift. When we cast off the Hank and the Jank and generational curse. Paradigm shift. When spreading God's love is the only business too important to fail. Paradigm shift. When innocent inmates exit prison and crooked lawyers go to jail. Paradigm shift. When it's not about lumber but the oxygen that our trees create. Paradigm shift. When we heed the warning of the rainforest before it's too late. Paradigm shift. When you finally get into your zone, it's bill collectors on the paradigm phone. Shit. When you work your fingers to the bone and they still take your home. Paradigm shit. When the people with good jobs are mad and the unemployed folks are chilling. Paradigm shit. When there's not one person left to help the slave owners make a killing. Paradigm shit. When the love of money is always trumped by the love for mankind. Paradigm shit. When taking time to get it right doesn't mean you're getting left behind. Paradigm shit. When you sell the units from your heat and you don't owe the label shit. Paradigm shit. When you spit out the bit and finally get all you're supposed to fucking get. Paradigm shit. When you're paid to create, not to destroy, and you work for yourself. Paradigm shit. When we're all making money and guess what? Ha, it's still a gang of it left. Paradigm shit. When nations compete to see who can serve God more. Paradigm shit. Instead of crawling around back, we're walking straight through the front door. Paradigm shit. When trigger-happy police don't have clout without a reasonable doubt. Paradigm shit. When the two-party system they tout is finally on its way out. Paradigm shit. When the real parents fall off and the grandparents raise the kids. Paradigm shit. When kids make the grandparents regret all the work that they did. Paradigm shit. When you make a true friend, you stick with them and that's a homie for life. Paradigm shit. When the hating gets so sharp and strong that it cuts like a knife. Paradigm shit. When old people chase their dreams too, not just their kids. Paradigm shit. When even rich people pay for all the wrong that they did. Paradigm shit. When the only real rule that applies is that not one of us dies. Paradigm shit. When the truth sets folks free and crooks are hung by their own lies. Paradigm shit. When neighbors look out for each other and never covet their wives. Paradigm shit. When it takes a village to raise a child and we protect them with our lives. Paradigm shit. When beauty is not just an illusion that we see on TV. Paradigm shit. When poor people's dreams can come true and their children live free. Paradigm shit. Paradigm shit. Paradigm shit.